right, good morning, and Mr. Schlosser, if you're ready, please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I'm Tom Schlosser on behalf of the HOOPA plaintiffs. In this case, the Interior Department approved a per capita distribution to individual Indians of approximately $80 million of Indian trust funds, which went to the Yurok tribe members only, without any portion going to the qualified HOOPA tribal members.
Let me ask you a preliminary question in response to that. What are you seeking monetarily in the way of damages in this case? Are you saying that you're entitled to recover for this alleged breach of fiduciary duty, the total amount, that big piece of cash that they turned over to the tribe?
Not the total amount turned over to the tribe, Your Honor. The part that was individualized in a per capita payment.
Yes, because the tribal you're asking that, in effect, you're saying, as I understand it, that it violated their fiduciary, Interior's fiduciary duty to your tribe to turn over this money to the Yuroks.
No, it violated the fiduciary duties to the individual Indians of the reservation under the interpretation of the tribal timber statute, which gave rise to this money. That statute, 25 U.S.C. 407, says the money shall be used for the benefit of the Indians who are members of the tribe or tribes concerned. And this court, in the Short case, determined that that meant when the money was individualized, not when it was given to the tribe, but when it was individualized, it had
Did Interior distribute this money to the individual Indians? I thought it distributed it to the tribe, and the tribe in turn sub-distributed it to the individual Indians.
That is correct, and that's exactly what was done in the Short case between 1974 and 1980. And what the court held there was that the federal government can't avoid its fiduciary duties by making a distribution to the individuals through the tribe. And that was upheld by this court in the Short 7 opinion, the 1995 opinion.
Let me ask you another preliminary question. I just want to be sure that you agree, I think, don't you, that the amounts that the Interior gave out both to your tribe and to the Yuroks was exactly what the Settlement Act contemplated?
No, we do not.
Here's why.
The Settlement Act provided for a lot of different payments, including the payment that went to the Hoopa Valley Tribe and to the Yurok Tribal members. Those payments were all many years ago. The Settlement Act didn't expressly provide for a certain payment to the Yurok Tribe because it was conditioned on, and this is the point of our case, it's expressly conditioned in Section 2.4 and 2C.4 of the Act on a waiver by the Interim Tribal Council of the Yurok
Tribe. Which they gave, although you say it was untimely, is that right?
There were several problems with it. First of all, at the time they gave it, 19 years after the Act, the claim they were asked to waive had been fully litigated and didn't exist. Secondly,
but even if you're right about all of your reasons, which I've read in your brief, I mean, you extensively addressed it, even if you're right that they waived it and the government never should have ultimately turned over this pot of money to the Yuroks, it wouldn't have gone to Hoopa Valley. It would have gone back into the public fisc. Hoopa was paid out first. In this settlement, Hoopa received its money off the top. Then what was left in the balance was to be distributed to the Yurok. There's nothing in the settlement agreement that indicated that, and if the Yurok for some reason don't get it, Hoopa gets all the rest of the money too.
There isn't that provision, Your Honor, but neither is there a provision saying that unexpended money would return to the Treasury. On the contrary, Interior, when it submitted its report to Congress at the end of the litigation, Interior said that the money should be retained in trust and administered for the benefit of both tribes. Interior had authority, not expressed in the Settlement Act, but in the earlier litigation construing the timber statute. Interior had the authority to use that money for the benefit of the tribes.
And they did, and they divided after this discussion that you're talking about now, they divided out when they issued the amount and said, Hoopa gets this amount off the top, The remainder is for Yurok. These are two separate tribes occupying two separate parcels of land. So Hoopa got its entire due from the government. Even if Yurok waives its, there's no reason in the settlement to suggest that Hoopa gets the rest of it.
There is, and we're not arguing that Hoopa does get the rest of it. What we're arguing is that when the Secretary acts, not under a distribution authority that's created under the Settlement Act, but in administering the settlement fund, when Interior acts and individualizes the money, he must act in accordance with the statute.
I don't understand what you mean when he says individualizes the money. What? Did the Secretary take it and say to a particular Indian, here's your check for $5,000? No.
The Secretary handed the money over to the Yurok tribe, knowing that the Yurok tribe was going...
Knowing, but that's not the same thing as the Secretary individualizing. That was the Yurok tribe that did that.
That was enough in the short case, Your Honor.
Let me tell you what's troubling me about your position, and I'd like to hear what your answer to it is. In the 1973, the first Dewey Short opinion, the Court of Claims said that it was a single reservation, not two separate reservations, and that all the Indians of the reservation were entitled to share in the whatever the reservation had. And it seems to me, as I understand your argument now, what you're saying is, but the only Indians of the reservation who are entitled to share this huge pot of money were the Yuroks, because the Yuroks, the Hoopas, the Yuroks had failed timely to waive.
No, Your Honor, we're not saying that at all. That's not in our briefs.
It's in your briefs, but it seems to me it's the effect of your argument.
It's not the effect of the argument, Your Honor. If the government had used that money for the benefit of the tribe, suppose they had constructed a road, they wouldn't have damaged the Indians of the reservation, because the short case established that the federal government could use these tribal timber monies, the trust monies, for tribal purposes. The problem arises when they issue per capita payments. That was the problem in short. The government ultimately paid $65 million for the individualizations, either directly from the federal government or via the Hoopa tribe, and then individualized. In the situation we had under the Settlement Act, where the payment authority of the Settlement Act is exhausted, Interior had the authority to administer the funds. That's expressed in Section 4 of the Act. It says, hold and administer the funds, and their authority to administer the funds included the right to use the money to build a gymnasium at the Yurok Reservation, to build a road between the reservations, but they could not individualize the money or permit its individualization. That was wrongful under the law in the short case.
There's nothing indicating Hoopa's entitled to 100% of the money. Nothing. There's nothing indicating Congress would have appropriated this much money for Hoopa individually.
Your Honor, we're not seeking 100% of the money. None of this money was appropriated by Congress. This is Indian trust money cut from trees cut on the Indian reservation under the statute. We're not seeking 100%
of the money. But not all on Hoopa's reservation.
It was all on Hoopa's reservation, in fact.
Does Yurok not have a reservation?
They do have a reservation, but the land was allotted to individuals who sold or logged the land almost entirely. So the land held in trust, other than the forest land, which was offered to them as part of this waiver.
Would you like to reserve the balance of your time?
I would like to reserve. Thank you.
All right, we'll hear from the United States. Ms. Sprague?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm Mary Gay Sprague for the United States. Through the Hoopa-Yurok Settlement Act in 1988, the Hoopa tribe received 96% of the trust land within what was the joint reservation, and they received out of the settlement fund $34 million, which was about 40% of the fund as of that time. This is what Congress intended the Hoopa tribe to have. They got everything that the Settlement Act offered them, and they have benefited, and their members have benefited, for the last 20 years.
Well, Congress intended the entire lump sum to benefit the Indians in this area, correct?
Congress specified in the Settlement Act precisely what amount of money should go to which beneficiary. The share of the Hoopa tribe, the share for the Yurok tribe. There were individual payments to be made to members of the Yurok tribe, and then payments to be made for the Indians of the reservation who wanted to cash out and not be a member of either tribe. It was very clear in the Settlement Act that Congress was responding to the Short case and now the Court of Federal Claims and this court, which it said it understood the reason for the holding in that case because there was a problem. There was a joint reservation, but the Secretary was distributing funds to only certain of the individual Indians of the reservation. And that was what the Short case was about. But Congress said, this has been an unhappy experience for all of us. We're settling these disputes as to the land. We're settling the disputes as to the funds from the land that have not yet been distributed to individual Indians, and it set the rules.
Did the two tribes participate in the drafting of the Settlement Act?
Your Honor, the Hoopa tribe did, because it had been organized since the 1950s. The Yurok tribe was a recognized tribe, but it was not organized, so that the Yurok did not have a significant contribution in the drafting of the statute.
This case comes to us on an order that dismissed their claim, their case, because of lack of standing.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I wonder about that. I gather that you support that ruling.
Yes, Your Honor.
But what bothers me a little bit about it is what they seem to be saying is not that what the government did violated the Settlement Act, but that what the government did violated its fiduciary obligation to the Indians. And that, it seems to me, is a claim separate and apart from any claim that the government shouldn't have given the money to the Yuroks because they had failed to waive in the proper manner.
But the basis for the asserted breach of trust was the Settlement Act.
That's
because
right.
You have to have
now,
a fundamental
let's
basis.
Let's suppose, for the sake of argument, just a hypothetical, that what the government did breach their fiduciary obligation.
It was wrong.
To the Yurok.
Right.
Let's just assume that. I take it under the trial court's theory, there's no one who has standing to raise that.
That's correct, Your Honor. That is where separation of powers comes in. If the special trustee made a mistake, and the Secretary of the Interior thought he made a mistake, then he would get in trouble. Or if the President disagreed with the decision, the President would call him on the carpet. Or if Congress thought, you know, that's not really what we meant in that Settlement Act, Congress could hold an oversight hearing and pull him in and let him know its thoughts. And if Congress really believed that the action of distributing the money to the Yurok tribe was not consistent with the Settlement Act, then Congress could appropriate money to compensate individual Hoopa Indians. But it's a fundamental separation of powers issue here, that in the Settlement Act, Congress designated who the beneficiaries were for this settlement fund, which it gathered up, and it said, the law of the Short case is done, we're starting over, and the Hoopa gets this much, and the individual Indians get this much. If there was a failure of condition, then the Secretary's options were to hold the money indefinitely, and that happened for a period of years. But no one is arguing that under the Settlement Act itself, the Secretary or the special trustee who had the delegated authority could ever give it to the Hoopa tribe or the Hoopa plaintiffs.
Let's assume that they were to prevail in their claim. Assume that. Could the government then get the money back from the Yuroks?
Your Honor, there is a third-party complaint against the Yurok tribe, and if we came to that day, which we very much hope we won't, then that would have to proceed.
Now, there's a third-party complaint where? Before the Court of Federal Claims?
In the Court of Federal Claims, yes, Your Honor.
On behalf of, filed by who?
The third-party complaint by the United States against the Yurok tribe.
Who is the government? It's the government's?
We filed a complaint against the Yurok tribe.
If we're required to disgorge what they're claiming, we want to be able to get it back from
right.
the Yurok.
And, Your Honor, we hope that day would never come.
But that's a pending complaint Is that the only thing that's still pending in the in this all of this litigation, other than this case, or are there some other claims pending?
Well, the short litigation, Your Honor, is still ongoing because, and this relates to distributions that were made to Hoopa Indians prior to 1988. But it's an extraordinarily complicated process of figuring out who the Indians of the reservation are, what their particular interest is. There have been deaths, you have to find heirs. 40-some later, it's still going on. And that's the thing that is absolutely clear in the Settlement Act. The last thing Congress wanted was to start a new short litigation. The absolute last thing.
The problem, of course, is that this Settlement Act contemplated a resolution which essentially would mean that the tribes that were in dispute would come in, would waive any right to sue, and would accept the settlement, and everything would be fine. Now, the Act, of course, did have the provision for litigation if one of the tribes disagreed. But what the Act didn't contemplate is the circumstance we're confronting now.
And it did not expressly address that.
So the Settlement Act, in effect, fails. You might say it's like a settlement agreement with three parties and two parties agree but the third doesn't. And in effect, the terms don't quite fit the circumstance, which is what we have here.
Right.
So then the dilemma for the United States is, well, all right, now what do we do? And it seems to me that the solution was, well, the intent of the Act was to resolve this. The Yuroks are willing to now waive, so let's give effect to the
Act. Right, and Your Honor, that's the question that would have to be addressed on the merits. Did the special trustee reasonably interpret the Settlement Act to permit the release of the funds to the Yurok tribe?
If they're standing.
If there is standing. But we believe that standing truly is a separate issue, because as to that, there is no ambiguity in the Settlement Act.
And it really turns on whether the Hoopa Valley tribe has already received whatever entitlements they could ever expect.
Which they acknowledge. We're dealing with the individual Hoopa Indians, as to which there is absolutely no provision whatsoever for them to get anything directly under the Settlement Act.
Okay, but there was a question a while back that Judge Friedman asked, and you agreed with an initial predicate of his question, which wasn't the point, but to me, why wasn't this case dismissed for lack of jurisdiction? I am having trouble appreciating why there's a judgment in favor of the government.
Your Honor, as we point out in our brief, we believe there was a technical flaw, that having decided there was no standing, it should have been dismissed. And in fact, we asked court to remand for a dismissal instead of a judgment.
So all we can do is vacate the judgment and remand with order to enter a dismissal.
Correct.
I don't think we have the authority to enter the dismissal ourselves.
Correct.
We have to. Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Yes, that is correct.
Do you want to save some time for your co-counsel?
I thought his time was taken out of my time already, but I'm mistaken.
You started. We put 12 minutes on top.
All right, thank you. I stand corrected.
The Hoopa plaintiffs are relying on heavily on Section 1300I-2 of the Settlement Act, which is the provision that says that the Act does not affect the entitlement established under decisions in the United States Court of Federal Claims in the short cases or any final judgment which may be rendered in those cases. What they are saying is that that section is intended to preserve broadly the law of the short case, the principle of the short case that arose from the problem of the joint reservation. In fact, that provision has the very limited purpose of saying, going forward, we have new rules, but we're not going to upset the proceedings that are already underway in the Court of Federal Claims. So with respect to the pre-Settlement Act distributions as to which damages were being adjudicated, that can go forward. And that was recognized by the Court of Federal Claims in what has become called Short 6, which was when, after the Settlement Act and the secretary made the payment to the Hoopa tribe, and then the Hoopas made the $5,000 per capita distribution to their members. The Yurok tribe came in and they said, well, we're entitled to damages under Short for that distribution. And the Court of Federal Claims said, I'm sorry, but no, you're not.
Well,
the Settlement Act instituted new rules.
Didn't the Yurok basically do the same thing? That is, the secretary gave them this big piece of pot of money, and they in turn gave individual payments to to members of the tribe. Isn't that the way it worked with the Yurok?
They did that, Your Honor, and if we were still living in the Short case, the Court of Federal Claims did say that the damages still follow. But the 1988 Settlement Act set new rules, and we're now living after the Settlement Act. So any distributions made after the Settlement Act are subject to the new rules. And the Yurok tribe's decision to distribute, when it got its money in April of 2007, it then made its own decision, which, by the way, was not approved by the Interior Department. There was no obligation for Interior to approve it. It, in January 2008, made a distribution. So that the premise of the argument, which is the merits, and so we don't need to take on in great detail, that this was an action of Interior making this distribution, that is an incorrect factual premise.
All right. Thank you very much. Hear from your co-counsel.
Your Honor, Jonathan Abram for the Yurok Tribe. I think it will please the Court for me to tell you that I have nothing to add. Unless you have questions, I'd be glad to cede my time. If you do have questions, of course, I'm here to answer them.
No. All right. Thank you. We always appreciate that. Mr. Slasher.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me first start with what happened when the Settlement Act was going through Congress. Congress held four separate hearings. There were several factions of the Yurok tribe involved. There were numerous Yurok attorneys. So when we say the Yurok tribe wasn't involved, that's kind of a technical phrase saying they weren't operating under a constitution at that time. They were very involved.
But at that time, was there a duly organized Yurok tribe?
Not recognized by Interior. They were recognized as a tribe, but their organization was not recognized because of the Short case. But they were very involved. And I think the government tries to skew or tries to make it sound as though the Settlement Act was unfair to invite the court to disregard the plain language Congress used. The plain language Congress used shows that Congress was making an offer to the Yurok Interim Tribal Council, but it was not conveying money. And that offer was refused. The Act says apportionment of funds to the Yurok tribe, and I skip, shall not be effective unless and until the Interim Council has adopted a resolution waiving any claim. The claim they were talking about was the claim that the partition of the reservation was unfair and violated the Fifth Amendment.
But there was nothing in that provision that set any time limit upon the waiver, did it?
No, you have to go back to Section 9. Section 9, which deals with the Interim Tribal Council, says that the Tribal Council will represent the Yurok Tribe in the implementation of provisions of this Act. And then it goes on in Section 9D5, to say that the Interim Council shall be dissolved upon the election of an initial tribe governing body or after 2 years. It was clear at the time. They knew that they had 2 years to act. And they were warned by Interior before the 2 years expired that if they don't act on the claim waiver resolution, you will lack authority to do so afterwards. They were warned during the litigation saying, if you want to dismiss this case, you must do it before we reach the merits, otherwise it will be impossible to comply. So the 2 years is clearly implied because that was the lifespan of the body that was required to take the action. Now,
But the basic purpose of putting in this waiver requirement that they don't get the money unless or until they have waived is to make certain that the government wouldn't have to pay twice. That's the purpose of it, isn't it? In other words, the government said to them, look, we don't want you to take all this money and then turn around and sue us and collect some more.
Which is exactly what they did. They turned around and sued them.
But they didn't collect. They lost.
Pardon?
They didn't collect any additional money. They lost.
Yes, but in terms of whether they complied with the waiver requirement, what Congress wanted to avoid is exactly what happened, which is 10 years of litigation in a case that was iffy. The Library of Congress, the Congressional Research Service, did a report on whether the act was a taking and said the California situation is unusual and the court could hold that it's a taking. Congress wanted the tribes to waive that claim and not litigate it. Yurok chose to refuse the offer, figuring they could get more later. Now, I want to address the point you made, Your Honor, that the breach of trust asserted is one arising not directly from the Settlement Act, but from the act that gave rise to the funds. The Tribal Timber Statute, which was definitively construed by the court in Short versus United States, required that if these individualized distributions occur, they have to go to all Indians of the reservation. Now, in Short 6, which counsel's referred to, the Settlement Act specifically authorized a distribution to Hoopa tribal members. So it's not true that the Act doesn't have provisions saying Hoopa tribal members can receive monies. They were referred to in Section 7B of the Act.
But didn't the Settlement Act set up a different distribution arrangement?
Precisely, Your Honor. It did set up a different distribution arrangement, but that distribution couldn't be fully carried out because of the Yurok decision by 1993 not to waive the claim. So when Interior complied with the Act, and the Act did envision this as a possibility, Interior was supposed to submit a report to Congress on a number of issues, including recommendations for any supplemental funding necessary to implement the terms, modifications, and so on. Interior did that. At the time they made that recommendation, they were following Congress's instructions for what to do if there was money left over. That money was not general appropriations. That was Indian trust money from timber cut on this reservation. In addition to the reference to Hoopa members in Section 7B, there's also a reference in Section 5E. So Hoopa tribal members were referred to and are definitely beneficiaries under the Act. Finally, the Settlement Act is not a non-justiciable, doesn't lead to non-justiciable controversies. The Act clearly was intended to be enforced by the tribes. Congress referred to that in the Act. In fact, they've set up a false dichotomy in saying Yurok couldn't sue and also waive. In fact, they could. They could file the suit, which they did, because the statute of limitations was short, and they had a year and a half in which to decide whether or not to waive the claim. And they got right to the end of it and were urged to act, saying you won't be able to act later, and they refused to do it.
All right. Thank counsel, all parties. The case is submitted. That concludes our hearing this morning.
All rise. The Honorable Court is adjourned until tomorrow morning.